You're tuned to Colorado Matters. I'm Dan Dreher. One of Colorado's longest playing and well-known horn bands has a new CD. Chris Daniels and the Kings call the new release The Spark, and it features some of the swing and R&B that typifies what this band has been creating over the years. But The Spark also focuses on a more acoustic sound. Chris Daniels joins us today. Welcome to the program.
It's great to be here.
You write in your liner notes that your friends told you to risk it with this CD. What was that risk?
Well, I think the risk was, first of all, songwriting, and that I, with the Kings, had sort of not done as much. I'd been counting on good friends, Dave Steen and Gary Nicholson, for a much more rhythm and blues and funk sound. And a lot of the friends of mine who I work with in the studio said, you know, we hire you to play acoustic guitar. Maybe you ought to do that on one of your records. So it's like, oh, good. Yeah, that makes sense. And then to add the songwriting. And so 9 of the 12 tunes are mine. And each one is basically acoustic guitar based. It's the bed on which the song is built.
Is that how you are writing songs? Do you start with your guitar? Do you start with a piano? How do you start a song out?
It sort of depends. Sometimes they're long labors of love that you keep going back in and working on. Sometimes it's a guitar riff. Sometimes it's that wonderful thing that it just sort of comes to you. It's kind of like finding a $20 bill in a pair of pants that you watched. You know, it's sort of, oh my God, where did that come from? That song, The Biggest Heartache on the Block, was just one of those where I was sitting around playing the guitar, and this is great riff, and I came up with that, hey, I got the biggest heartache on the block. And you know, like I said, it's just like finding a $20 bill in a pair of pants. It's like, I don't remember putting that in there. It's great.
Well, let's talk about the title song, The Spark. What's going on with that wildfire metaphor in there?
True story. I was looking for a used car about a year ago, and the Hayman fire was going on. I was talking with a used car salesman, a really nice guy, and he said, you know, a lady lit that fire. I said, boy, problems. That started a long time before she lit that fire. And it's one of those moments where you go, can you just hold that thought for a minute? Let me write that down. And that was, it sort of was a metaphor for a lot of things. The band, which had been together 19 years, started out as somebody gave me a suggestion and said, you know, you really ought to do a rhythm and blues band with horns. So it was just that spark of things, and thinking things don't really ever start at that moment when you first hear it, that there's a whole lot of stuff that happens beforehand. So that's kind of what it came from.
The used car salesman was talking about Terry Barton, who started the fire, and he was talking about the marital problems, I guess,
right,
that
exactly.
were going on there, or
right.
the relationship issues. And there's some of that in this song, too,
yeah.
I think.
It starts out with somebody who's all of a sudden found themselves in a love affair with someone, and they started out as friends. And they have sort of been coy and hiding this from each other. And I think the line is, but something that I said to you must have let my secret out. So it starts off looking at that thing, because that's the one we all know the best. You know, we've all had feelings for someone and sort of kept them hidden. But then the other question was, when things go wrong, they don't, you know, we always see it when it blows up into fire. But there's usually a history of where it came from. So,
well, back to the band metaphor. Could you have written a song like The Spark if the band were just getting underway? Or does it really depend on that history of experiences together with the band members over the years?
That's a great question. I think it depends upon there being history and being at a point in life where you can look at more than just the surface things that are right in front of you and go deeper. The movie Bowling for Columbine, one of the things that Michael Moore did was to look at not just the event, but everything that surrounded the event and ask questions of it. And I think that happens as you get in, as you get a little older and you start to be able to look at things.
When you're not on stage, you teach college-level courses in jazz guitar and theory.
Yeah.
How has being a teacher influenced you as a musician?
Boy, immensely. One of the things that it does is it teaches you what you know. It also teaches you what you don't know. I have students who were into, you know, like really heavy metal bands. There's all-girl heavy metal band called Kitty, and bands like Tool, and they want to know how to play those guitar riffs. Well, this is not something I spend a lot of time doing, but it's really fun to do that and sort of go, yeah. And especially with the jazz stuff, it teaches me, one, how I know what I know and what that means for explaining it to someone. And it also teaches me all of the holes in my knowledge. All of a sudden I go, wow, I just don't know that much about how Django Reinhardt was doing those scales, you know, with those fingers. So, and you have to go look and find out and figure it out. So it's really good that way.
So it sounds like you're saying that the students are forcing you to go buy some music.
Yeah, they are. They are. The other thing that is very true is that teaching is a performance art, and I mean, it's truly you are performing in front of the class, but it's different than actually being on stage because you really can't get away with stuff. You've got to know your stuff, and I've been caught up a couple of times by my students who will, you know, raise their hand and go, Professor Daniels, let me ask you about that one. So you have to know your stuff. It's
what
great.
Kind of, what did they ask you?
Well, the classic one was we were talking about the Ken Burns series on jazz. The fact that they hadn't done much with Latin jazz, and I was saying there's all these great Latin artists that you just got to see, and starting going all the way back, you know, to people who aren't around, Chano Poza, all the way up to people who might still be around, like Tito Puente, and little hand went up and said, well, no, not Tito.
So, that's right, because he died recently.
A few years back, and so it was one of those things where you just sort of go, oops, yeah, I'll catch up on that one. So they keep you very honest. It's great.
I love this idea of seeing you going into a record store. Listen to me, I'm dating both of us by saying record.
Right.
A CD store,
right.
and having to buy a CD of Tool and put it into your car on the drive home.
Oh yeah. Well, and it's fun to do, but at the same time, I also, you know, I'll go by my buddy Paul over at Twisted Shout, and I'll go by Paul's and say, okay, Bob Wills, I'm really interested in this swing stuff. You know, there's some really good stuff, and there's the new guys here in Colorado. You know, educate me. And he's great. So he sits me down and takes me through stuff. So I love it.
What do you tell your students about life as a professional musician?
That's a great question. I tell them two things. I tell them, first of all, you're going to have great moments, and you're going to have, in the same day, moments where people give you the feeling of complete rejection. And that's the toughest thing to deal with in a long career, is you have these, you know, wonderful moments, that's wonderful. And then the next day you'll have a critic who says, it's a terrible record, we don't like you. So you have to be able to deal with both of it. And I think it's why a lot of, you know, musicians wind up getting kind of diverted into areas they shouldn't get diverted into. It's tough to deal with that emotionally. It's an emotional roller coaster. So that's the first thing I tell them.
You mean drugs.
Drugs and alcohol, all mm-hmm. kinds of, you know, I mean, these days, all kinds of stuff. I think it's very difficult emotionally to deal with a roller coaster. And I think people look for ways to do that. And sadly, one of the easiest ways is drugs and alcohol and inebriating yourself. Mm. And it doesn't work. I mean, that's just sort of basic. The other thing that I tell them is to, when they have the successes, and we all have them, find a place emotionally to put that on a wall somewhere and say, yeah, you know, I got to sing with Bonnie Raitt. And there's a picture of the two of us singing in L.A. at the Roxy, you know. And, I mean, for me, that happened for me. And the coolest part of it was afterwards when Bonnie was sitting there, and this was the year she won 5 Grammys. It was sitting there and said, hey, Chris, would you want mind walking me to my car? This is, you know, Sunset Boulevard. You know, walking her out to her car and talking with her like you and I are sitting here talking about stuff, and her saying, hey, thanks for walking me to the car and walking off, you know, and you sort of put that on the wall and go, whoa, that was cool. You know, and that's what I tell them is hold on to the good things, because, you know, it's a tough life. There's a lot of road miles. There's a, you know, a lot of hours on a bus.
If you just tuned in, we're talking with Colorado musician Chris Daniels about his band's latest CD called The Spark. Let's listen to another cut off the CD. This is Way Out West.
We load in through the kitchen, where Cajunto is always playing. Nobody speaks any English, except when the gringos are paying. Out through the double doors, where the bride's all dressed in white, and the girlfriend out west. New houses on hills without trees, way out west. The fires are burning and the rivers don't reach the sea.
What's behind this story?
Two things. First of all, there's a joke about a lawyer and a doctor and a musician going to heaven, and they get to heaven, and make a long story short, the lawyer and the doctor get in, and St. Peter looks at the musician and says, you load around back through and through the kitchen. And that's sort of your life as a musician. You load in through kitchens, and you see these different worlds, and you go through the kitchen, and there's the world. It's a very Chicano world back there. And then you go out into the next room, and there's the bride, and, you know, and everything's going on there. And that's a completely different world. There's two different worlds, and they live right side by side. So that's part of it. The other part of it, there's a marvelous book called by Douglas Adams called Last Chance to See. And I remember first coming to Colorado in 1969, and between Broomfield and Boulder, you got the feeling that you could have been one of the original Native Americans standing there. There was nothing there, these rolling hills up to the Flatirons. That's not the case anymore. It's rolling houses. Now, maybe 90 years from now, it'll be rolling trees and houses, but it'll never be what it was. It'll never be that rolling grasslands up to the hills. And so that's what the song was about, is all of these worlds kind of crashing together in Colorado.
You studied under Patty Nelson Limerick, who's a MacArthur Fellow at CU, MacArthur Fellow in History under CU. What did you learn from her that you brought to this song?
Oh, God. Patty's amazing. Patty and Ralph Mann and Gloria Main were all my advisors and teachers up at CU. And Patty was marvelous in, I mean, for all historians, has been wonderful at changing our point of view from settlers in the West to conquest, and the West as conquest, and that's what it was. And she is also one of the best dancers I've ever seen. She and we've done a couple of parties where Patty comes and dances, and unbeknownst to most people, history professors get wild and crazy at parties. It's a great thing.
Do you think that the West, or at least a Colorado musician, needs to go on and on about growth here? Is this your way of sort of holding up your fist and saying something about growth?
I think that's part of it, and the other part of it is just to be an observer. I mean, I think one of the things that's important to do is to speak up. I'm not really good at sitting in a room when there's a big elephant in the room. And the growth in Colorado is truly the elephant in the room. In some ways, it's been handled well. In other places, it's been handled horribly. And I think it's different than the version of the West that we heard from John Denver. Not that his was wrong, just it's a different world. And when I travel, when we go to Holland or places like that, they go, oh, you come from Colorado, John Denver, I like him, you know, and you sort of want to go, well, it's kind of a little different than that. And so that was kind of the part of the impetus behind the song.
It's interesting you talk about being an observer, because you started out your career as a journalist before you switched to music.
Yeah, I did.
What happened?
Oh, God. Oh, you guys work much too hard. It's a couple of things. Being dyslexic, I was working for this is back before fax machines, and you had to do dictation. I was doing a story on the Minnesota Vikings at the Minneapolis Tribune, and I knew how to take my hieroglyphs and put them into English language, but the slot man, and this is sort of a newspaper thing, needed the story right away. And I said, no, just give me a minute to set it up. No, I need it right away. No, you know, this went back and forth. Finally, I sent it to him, and he went, what is this? And I said, I tried to tell you, it's my hieroglyphics. So that didn't last long there. But I had some great successes. I worked for the Fergus Falls Daily Journal up in there, Minnesota, don't you know? And Colin Peterson, who's a senator, I wrote a story about him because he tried to ban drum machines in the Minnesota State Legislature. And it got picked up by the AP Wire, so I had a little success.
So no regrets about leaving newspaper work?
No, it was. My heart's always been in music. I think journalism really helped me in being unafraid of being edited. I got really comfortable. I have a dear friend named Tom Wiggins, who he and I laugh about what we call Ishtar moments in songwriting.
Based on the movie that Warren Beatty
and Dustin Hoffman did. It was a colossal failure. You have this awful moment where you've put this colossal line in there, something like, to give the gift that keeps on giving. You know, you just go, oh, whoops. And we have these Ishtar moments. And I got really unafraid of being edited and unafraid of editing myself. So that's what it did. It was the best thing.
But how much editing goes on? You're a songwriter. You get to say whatever you want to, right? How much editing goes into this songwriting stuff?
Well, but you have placeholders. My favorite is someone talked about the Doe a Deer song that we all know. Doe a Deer, female deer. Me, A Note to Follow Soul. Okay, that's a placeholder, right? That's one of those ones where somebody came up with a line and couldn't think of something. So they said, me, A Note to Follow Soul. I'll get back to that and fix that, and never did. So you know, you have placeholders. You know, I love you, baby. Yes, I do. Oh, I'll get back to that. And if you don't get back to it, it winds up pressed on a piece of plastic that lasts longer than dinosaurs. So you got to, you know, I'm constantly editing.
You have just officially ruined The Sound of Music for me now.
For millions of listeners. Well, they never found a better line. I'm sure they went back to it. They went, me, A Note to Follow. So, nah, nothing better. That's it.
Our guest is Chris Daniels, who is a songwriter and singer and fronts the band Chris Daniels and the Kings. It's a horn band that's been around in Colorado for many, many years. Their new CD is called The Spark. Well, you have more than a dozen friends sitting in on this new CD,
yeah.
Including Molly O'Brien, who many of our listeners know, of course, from Prairie Home Companion. Why don't you tell us about Biggest Heartache on the Block?
Well, it was written initially from one point of view, and then I thought about Molly with this, and it really becomes, there's three elements in it. One is Billy Payne's piano. And Bill Payne is an old friend of the band, and he used to sit in with us. And, of course, you know him from Little Feet. But he did this piano part that sounded like a honky-tonk piano part in something like Blazing Saddles. And so there's this honky-tonk piano part, and I thought of Molly, and it became really a conversation. And you almost hear, it's almost sort of John Wayne and Katharine Hepburn sort of talking to each other in an old bar going, you know, you're going to have the biggest heartache in the block when you don't have me. And then Katharine Hepburn says, no, John, it's going to be you, you know. And the Duke is going, no, I don't think so, little missy. And there's this great sort of rapport and the honky-tonk piano in the background. So that's kind of what it is. It's really it's a Western barroom scene with these people in it, in my mind.
Oh, I think it works. In fact, let's hear when Molly weighs in with her point of view. This song is about breaking up. This is pretty serious stuff here, and you guys are having tons of fun.
Well, I think that's... I wrote a piece once called Therapy, and the whole idea was that writing a song about breaking up is much cheaper than therapy. So, I think that's the idea. It's, you finally get to a point when you're sort of going through a breakup, when you start to recover, and you can look back on it with a fair amount of humor. And there's that wonderful point when you sort of go, well, you're going to miss me when I'm gone. And that's what the two of them are sort of battling over, is they're not over it yet. You can tell that they're not over it yet, but they might be soon.
I like that Molly gets the last word.
Oh, of course. You've always been a dreamer.
Well, along with Molly, you've got Sonny Landreth, who played with Mark Knopfler from Dire Straits, and as you mentioned, Bill Payne from Little Feet, and you've even got bluegrass musician Sam Bush on here as well. Was it tough coordinating all these schedules?
Well, it was and it wasn't. They're such dear friends. To come and sit in, I owe them all deeply. Some of it we did with them actually in town. Tony Furtado, for instance, was driving from a gig in the South. He moved back. He lived in Colorado and moved back up to Portland. So he just came by the studio in Boulder and sat in. Sam Bush, we sent him out a CD. These days, everything being done on digital and stuff like that, you can send things out. So we sent it out to Sam. And Sam put on his tracks and sent it back in, and then we just put it back on. So that's the coordination is made a little simpler these days because of the wonderful world of digital technology.
Our guest is Chris Daniels from the Colorado-based band Chris Daniels and the Kings, and we're talking about their latest release called The Spark. I want to come back to and play the cut that we opened the conversation with called Jump, this great swing tune called Jump.
Drops the phone to say, pretty baby, I'm yours, yours alone. Well, she says, jump, jump, jump.
I know this feels like Jump Blues, inspired by Count Basie. Who else influenced this style?
Well, a lot. Louis Jordan, and I think that was my introduction. I was touring with a guy named Russell Smith from the Amazing Rhythm Aces, and Russell was doing Caledonia and all these wonderful old tunes by Louis Jordan, and I had no idea who Louis Jordan was, so I started listening and then started researching it more and just absolutely fell in love with Louis Jordan. That led me to Louis Prima, and that led me to Louis Armstrong, mm-hmm. and that led me to Count Basie, and so I just fell in love with it. I mean, swing is just infectious. In fact, it was about 1990, I was sitting with this amazing Dutch radio DJ named Big Al, and Big Al is sort of the Wolfman Jack of Holland, and he talks like this. He said, hey, Chris, man, it's great to talk to you. But he was just a marvelous guy, and we were talking about doing a record of all Jump Blues, and he said, no one will buy it, but it'll be great. And he used to call our music for the happy few. So finally, about 1997, we recorded a total record of it called Louie Louie. It was a tribute to Louis Armstrong and Louis Jordan, Louis Prima. So that's how I got into it, and I just love swing. It's really fun.
Is there ever any concern, either in the band or even among your fans, that here's this R&B band, they do a little bit of rock and roll stuff, they throw in some swing. Is there ever any worry about dilution of the sound of Chris Daniels and the Kings?
I think the worry was that we would be pegged as a swing band, and because swing kind of comes and goes. I mean, right now we're having a bunch of luck because Argentina has decided they love swing, so all of a sudden we're having huge success in Argentina because of it. Rolling Stone in Argentina reviewed us.
You're big in Buenos Aires.
We're huge in Buenos Aires. But, you know, you sort of have to laugh at that. But it comes and goes, and we were afraid of being pegged as a swing band because it's part of what we do, and it's truly the roots of rhythm and blues. Louis Jordan, Chuck Berry once talked about learning all of his Johnny B. Goode guitar licks from listening to Louis Jordan's guitar player. So they're tied closely together, but Jump Blues has got a very swing sound. I mean, Louis Jordan came out of Chick Webb's band in the Savoy and the great ballroom in Harlem,
mm-hmm.
so with Ella Fitzgerald, and so that was...
There's a rich past that goes along with it.
Yeah.
How do you guys ride the ups and downs of swing? It's popular enough to have clubs start up that are all swing, and then the clubs close because salsa's in or something.
Yeah.
New. How do you guys ride that tide?
Well, it's just always part of what we do, and it's never all of what we do. I remember talking with the fellow who runs Herman's Hideaway, Alan, about when swing became huge about 1998, 99 for a very short period of time. And he said, we love having them here. I said, but they don't drink. They're so energetic. They're swinging around. So they just drink water. So, you know, it comes and it goes. And for us, it's never been all of what we do, but it's truly in the roots of what we do. So we always do, you know, it's always there in what we play.
You talked a little bit about being in Holland and playing in Europe. I know you've played in Europe a number of times. What do you like about playing there?
I think the European audiences actually know more about music than American audiences do, which is a little frightening about, you know, I'm not sure what that means, but it's true. We'll have people who will sit down, and I've actually had people bring me Louis Jordan records that were recorded in Europe that have never been released in America. So that's one of the things that I love about it. In Holland especially, we had a song called American Tragedy that went to kind of number one there, and we'll start singing that song, and, you know, it's hilarious. The whole audience does, you know, the lighters and the candles in the air, you know, and the matches, and it's really fun, and they know the words. Of course, the Dutch speak English better than most of us do. So I think that's one of the things I love about European audiences, plus the fact they do just a zillion festivals. Anytime they can do a festival, they love it, and they have no hang-up about it all sounding the same. So they'll have a swing band followed by a rhythm and blues band, and King Sonny Ade followed by Chris Daniels and the Kings followed by Toto. You know, it's just great, you know. And we played a festival that was the bill. We were in between King Sonny Ade and Toto, and I'm going, well, okay, that's diverse.
Are they expecting you at all to play covers of other American bands while you're there?
They really don't like that. Actually, that's one of the funniest things. I made that mistake when I first went over there. In 1991, our first tour, I played Hot, 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 because I'd worked for David Johansen when I was a kid, and so I always thought it was a great tune. I played this tune, and the critics said, well, you know, it was a pretty good show, but he really shouldn't play other people's songs. He needs to stick to his own songs. And I was going, oh, okay. Learned that lesson right off the bat. So especially the Dutch and the Germans and the French really want that sort of emotional, you know, what is your emotional strain? Sometimes we're a little too happy for them. The one time they get confused is we will tend to put very happy sort of jump blues kind of tunes next to something like American Tragedy. And that's a hard switch for them to make. Americans are more accustomed to that kind of a genre jump.
Our guest is Chris Daniels from the Colorado-based band Chris Daniels and the Kings, and we're talking about their latest release called The Spark. What's it like taking all seven members of the band and going on the road? How's the traveling with this band?
Well, I'm lucky. I play with these incredible musicians. They literally kick my butt every night. Every night, the trumpet player will at one point come up with a quote from, you know, something, and the whole band will go, what's he playing? Oh, my God, he's playing the Alka-Seltzer theme. And we'll start thinking back to, right, for dinner we had really bad lasagna. So all of a sudden he's playing plop, plop, fizz, fizz as a quote in the middle of his solo. And we're just falling out. So it's a good time. We have a really good time. You know, but, you know, it's seven guys on the road, you know. You get to Paris and, you know, the city of fountains and love, and you're sitting there with eight guys in a bus and, you know, they all need a shower. It's not romantic.
Because you're keeping musician hours. You're playing clubs late at night.
Yeah.
It can be pretty tiring, I think.
It is, but for years, you know, I quit drinking years and years and years ago, and I don't do any other kind of happy fluids. So, you know, I'm a real sort of clean, sober kind of guy. So for me, it's not that bad. I get up in the morning. You know, the band, the guys in the band, you know, they're doing band things. So I love it because I get up in the morning and I start going out and I'll go to museums and I'll come back. It'll be 2 o'clock in the afternoon. They're waking up and I go, guys, it's Paris, the Louvre. You got to try this thing. It's a really cool thing. You know? And they all go eventually. So
they just get started later.
They get started a little
because
later.
Because they're doing band things. That means they're enjoying themselves.
Frosty beverages.
Frosty beverages late at night on the Champs-Élysées.
That's on the Champs-Élysées. They're having a good time.
Do you ever feel old?
Oh, let's see. I think when I feel dated is when I listen to the harmonic structure of current rock and roll. And I think it's gotten very limited. And that, to me, really makes me feel dated because I listen to swing and because I listen to jazz and because I listen to different stuff. And when I hear a band like Tool, when I hear a band like Kitty, I want to go, guys, man, there's more than these chords. And granted, you need to sound that way in order to create that sort of goth sound. But you sort of want to go, man, there's more than a root and a fifth and a chord. So I sometimes feel dated that way. But it's just because of wanting people to know more. One of the funny things about music, the more you learn, it's really never ending. The more you learn, the more you realize you don't know. And you just want to go farther and farther into it. I'd love it. I mean, if you're going to spend 70 years on the planet doing something, what a great way to do it. You know, just keep exploring this thing that is never ending and gets deeper and deeper.
What cut should we go out on? What do you like?
I think one of my favorites is 50-50, because Sonny Landreth, who's just a marvelous slide player, is out with John Hyatt now, has his own records. I met Sonny years ago when we both lived up in Allen's Park up above Boulder, and we played at this little place called the Hummingbird Cafe. And he's become the god now of slide guitar. I mean, he's really just a phenomenal player. And the song has got all of these wonderful elements. This is a Louisiana funky guitar player with very mariachi-sounding horns, a song about breaking up in Mexico to a reggae rhythm. And so it's sort of Mexican reggae swamp funk, you know, and it's just, and I love that when you can take these elements and pull them together and yet make it work, and I think it does.
Thanks so much for talking to us.
Oh, it's been great to be here. Thanks so much for having us.
Chris Daniels fronts Chris Daniels and the Kings. The band's latest CD is The Spark.
Our love is like this little Mexican town, takes a whole lot of hits, still hanging around. But dogs are leaving the streets and the roosters stop crowing. Teresa's heading north because the seams are showing. You and me, baby, been through worse than this. Hurricanes, earthquakes, turns and twists like some wild.